future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Quit it now!
Always remember New York, and this one into the left field corner, it's gone.
Wayne, you don't want to wake up a sleeping giant, and he lives for these type of moments. We said it in the open that with the lights so bright, that's who you want after playing along with Carlos Correa, but that was a short, easy swing, getting his foot down with the best of it.
And now a fly ball to right center field. This one is hit well. It's Rosario at the wall. It is gone. Taylor Trammell Devers, the back-breaking blood of the Yankees here in the 10th.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. It is Bullpen with Brian McDonald, me, and Cam Smith behind the glass. Usually he is to my right, but Johnny Bellmer needed a day off because he's soft. And Sean Mapes, you know, he's kind of a diva wide receiver. He just shows up when he wants to. So it's just me and Cam Smith today. This is a little weird. I've never done a show where there's no one in the studio with me, Cam. So we'll experience this together. We'll see how it goes. But certainly made better last night by Jose Altuve in the Houston Astros once again being the Yankees' daddy. I mean, the dominance is unbelievable. I know they pointed out on the broadcast last night, well, the Yankees have actually won so many games in a row in the regular season. Okay, cool. Great. Congratulations, Yankees. You've won some regular season games. I'm glad that the franchise has fallen from pointing out 27 rings, 90% of which have happened before you were born, to now talking about, well, you know, we beat the Astros a few times in the regular season. Cool. 2015, scoreboard. 2017, scoreboard. Should we keep going? 2019.
We can, yeah.
2019, scoreboard. 2022, scoreboard.
Yeah.
Bring it in 2025, and it'll be scoreboard once again. But, man, I'm sure you loved it just as much as I did, Cam's. But your overall thoughts from the Astros and Yankees game last night?
Oh, I absolutely loved it. And I loved it even more that I was with my mom watching it, who might be a bigger Yankee hater than I am.
Really?
Oh, she – yeah. I mean, because she's been around longer than me, so she has more – years to develop this
build
hatred.
Up the hate, the
yeah,
hatred
to this hatred for the Yankees. But no, it was a good game. I did get a little nervous towards the end when I saw Josh Hader was putting in two innings worth of
work. And he allowed a run there in extra innings. His ninth inning was fine, but obviously allowed a run. Now he allowed a run that because he only allowed a run, and you know, I mean, not only allowed a run because he also gave up, you know, some hits, but like he gave up a run that started on second with the stupid Manfred man. So, which is a rule that I think it feels like is universally hated. I know it's a 3-0 opinion in against it on the Killer Bees with myself, Joel, and Jeremy. But yeah, he made a little bit dicey. You go into that inning with a 5-2 lead, so you could afford the one go across. Obviously, gets a little bit dicey in the latter part of regulation there before you get to extra innings because there was a near go ahead home run by the Yankees. I'm pulling it up. I'm trying to remember who exactly it was. Jose Abreu nearly gave up a home run to Wells, but it hooked just to the right of the right field foul pole, luckily, because the Astros had so many chances. Like, we'll get into Altuve and Correa, some of the individual performances in that game in just a minute. And if you want to join us, I should give out the phone number. That's Radio 101, 713-780-3776. That's the HRMP listener line again, 713-780-3776. If you want to call or text us, share your thoughts on the Astros being the Yankees' daddy. But it was disappointing because if that Wells ball just is a little bit more to the left and the Yankees go up, and obviously there would have been no need for extra innings, made more frustrating because the Astros missed so many opportunities, you know, before extra innings to cash in on, you know, run scoring chances when they had it. So
two of ten runners in scoring.
Is that
position.
What it was?
Yeah.
I hadn't seen that stat, but I just wrote down parts in the game on my notes about, you know, where they had chances to score runs, and this has been a theme all year. So this is not isolated to just last night against the Yankees. But third inning, Christian Walker, who he'll come up again here because, but Christian Walker flew out in the third inning with two runners on, missed opportunity there. Fourth inning, Taylor Trammell and Dubon both singles, both get on with singles with one out. Cam singled to right, but then Bellinger threw out Taylor Trammell on just an awful throw by the third, or an awful decision to send the runner by the third base coach. Like Cody Bellinger, I get it. It's a low scoring game. Every run counts. You want to maybe be aggressive and get the runner on and get that extra run, but you have to know not only the situation of the game as far as the situation of the play, where the ball's being fielded, how it's being fielded, who's the guy with the ball throwing it. Cody Bellinger has a plus arm. The ball was short in right field, and it was a direct run for Cody Bellinger. Like it was just a complete perfect storm to be a bad situation to send Taylor Trammell in that situation. So they send him. It was an awful sin, and Trammell was out by a mile. So another back-to-back innings where you have two runners on and don't get anything out of it. Then in the fifth inning, Altuve doubled on a grounder past the third baseman, advanced to third on a ground out, but was all for nothing because, again, I told you this name would come up again. Christian Walker flew out to end the inning there in the fifth. Then in the seventh inning, fast forward a couple innings, Altuve and Correa walk, two runners on with two outs, and you guessed it, Christian Walker struck out. Christian Walker, in three different innings last night, came up with multiple runners on and failed every single time. And we'll talk about Christian Walker in a second, but 0 for 5 with two strikeouts for Christian Walker. I mean, that game, it was an extra inning game, 5-3 is your final. It felt like the Astros could have blown that game open multiple times and not only avoided extra innings, but been in a situation where you didn't have to use your leverage arms like Brian Abreu and Josh Hader, who Josh Hader, I would assume, would not be available tonight after or this afternoon after throwing that many pitches over two innings yesterday. But you could have been in a situation where you didn't have to use those leverage arms because if Walker comes through, this game is, instead of, 2-0 before the Yankees tie it at 2, could be 5-0, 6-0. Like, there were so many opportunities in that game to completely put your boot on the Yankees' throat and it just completely take them out of the game. But, unfortunately, Christian Walker did what Christian Walker has done all season, and he didn't come through. But let's talk about the positive here, because Christian Walker was the negative. Having to go to extra innings and use your leverage arms was a negative. But, I mean, you heard the highlight in the open thanks to Apple TV. I mentioned it right after that highlight as well. Like, Jose Altuve just continues to be the Yankees daddy. It is absolutely amazing what that man consistently does in hostile environments when the entire stadium is booing him, right? Like, there are some guys who are just built to feed off and thrive off that hatred, the boos, everyone in the stadium, rooting against you, and Jose Altuve is that guy. And that's part, it's one of a thousand reasons why Jose Altuve is such a legend. But last night, Jose Altuve goes 2-for-4, also has a walk, and of course, the big two-run homer in the first inning to get the Astros out to the 2-0 lead. So, Cam, I don't know if you're done with, it looks like you're done with the phone call. I don't know if you've seen this, but remember we talked about months ago, to pat myself on the back here, completely self-congratulations here. Thank you. So it's not just self-congratulations anymore, and Chris will get to you here in just a second. If you also want to call in, HRMP listener line 713-780-3776. But we had this conversation in the bullpen. I made this take on the Killer Bees as well, that the struggles Jose Altuve was going through earlier in the year was just the simple career norm for him of not being a good hitter in May. Now, that doesn't make any logical sense why a Hall of Fame hitter could hit in every other month on the calendar, but for some reason can't hit in May. But it's been absolutely true. And I pointed out at the time that his career worst and average and OPS, all those things, all happened to happen in the month of May. It's not normal. Again, there's no reason to explain it. There's no way to make sense of it, but it's just the way it is. And since May 19th, when Jose Altuve's batting average, not that batting average is the be-all stat, but just using it as a point of reference. But since May 19th, when Jose Altuve's batting average hit a season low of 236, which, I mean, we're used to Altuve winning batting titles. I mean, he's got a career batting average above 300. So, I mean, 236 was alarming, and that's what I think everyone was, oh, my God, Father Time, settle down. He just sucks in the month of May for some reason. But anyway, again, since May 19th when his batting average hit a season low, 236. So there's 68 games since. Not a tiny sample size. Now, of course, of his career, it's a small sample size, but for the season, that's a fairly significant one. Over that time, 68 games, he's hitting 310 with a 925 OPS. You know, both numbers would put you in the MVP conversation. With 162 game pace of 38 home runs and 112 RBI. It's absolutely absurd. I mean, Jose Altuve's career high in home runs is 31. Now, I would never expect him over a full season to hit 38 home runs, but it just goes to show you how hot he's been since that season mark where he hit his low. 236 he was hitting on May 19th, 68 games since, hitting 310, 925 OPS, 162 game pace of 38 home runs and 112 RBI. There was nothing wrong with Jose Altuve. We know Alex Bregman always with the Astros, you know, struggled in April. So did Kyle Tucker to a degree. For Jose Altuve, it's May. Can't explain it, but it is what it is, and he's been hot, and he killed the Yankees last night. All right, let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Chris wants to talk about the Astros' win over the Yankees. Chris, what do you got for us? Turn down your radio, Chris.
Let's talk about the Astros' win over the Yankees.
Oh, man. Chris, you there? Last chance.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, turn off the radio, Chris.
I apologize. No, it was just sounding kind of weird on my phone.
All good. What you got for us?
Hey, real quick, sir. I love the fact that we went to extra innings and we smoked them in the 10th inning. Like, we took away their hearts. It's like they came back, they thought they had hope, and we totally just smashed all of New York's heart. I hate the Yankees with all my heart. I love the fact that we destroyed them. And it wasn't just – it wasn't Correa. It wasn't Altuve. It wasn't like our big name guy who hit the home run. It was our rookie who came off who they thought would come up and like, oh, this bum ain't nobody. That's all New York City's thinking. And we smash a home run in their face. And you can see as soon as they catch the ball out there in the stands, all their hearts are broken. And all the New York fans just walk away sad and depressed. And they know that we got them beat because their bats can't touch our bat except for Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
That's it, brother.
Good call, Chris. Thank you for that. I love the pettiness there from Chris. Like now I share the sentiment to a degree where, like, now I didn't love in the moment where the Astros were, you know, tied up and then had to go to extra innings. Like, there's some nerve wrecking moments there. But if you told me in advance, like, okay, you can either win in extras or you can win in regulation or you can break their heart in extra innings. I mean, give me the option of break their heart in extra innings because, I mean, the Yankees, hearing their call, because I always like to watch the YouTube package of highlights the next morning just so I can hear, because they'll mix in the other call and you might pick up a few things that you didn't, you know, hear during the Astros broadcast or the Apple TV broadcast as it was the case last night. But just to hear it in the voice of Michael Kay and Susan Waldman and the Yankees people that are paid to call their games those homers, just to see the heartbreak in their voice and then to see the fan reactions, especially to Devin Williams, one of their big acquisitions, Cam, like they hate Devin Williams.
Did you see the guy that was cursing out Aaron Boone?
And do you see his wife?
I didn't see his wife.
So, okay, he yells up, says something to Aaron Boone, which we can't say on these airwaves because it includes an F-bomb. And his wife, you can hear, you can see her mouth like, sit down. And she starts tugging on his shirt.
Yeah,
just completely embarrassed by her husband's
embarrassed
behavior.
By her team and her husband.
Yeah,
so the point of the extra innings, I love it too because not only do you walk out with the win,
right,
but you're having Yankee fans have to be there even longer, drag out their night, spend more money, offer it to just collapse in a Devin Williams 6.0 ERA.
Yeah, they pointed out what he's done since the All-Star break, and it's been pretty bad. I think I can't remember the exact number they said. It might have been like an ERA over 9. It was something really bad. I mean, it's to the point. Former host here at the station, Jake Asman, I don't know if you saw what he tweeted last night, but he wants them – I mean, Devin Williams has been a very – now, he's been awful, obviously, recently, and I get why they're mad at him. But he's, for his career, he's been a very good reliever. And Jake Asman's take on Twitter last night after the game was DFA Devin Williams and bring back the rule where you can't have beards because Devin, they allowed Devin Williams to grow a beard. It's you're so far in the Yankees and Yankee fans' heads that they're wanting to bring back the no beards rule, Cam. That's how far in the Yankees' head the Astros, mostly because of Jose Altuve. I think if it was anyone else beating them, although like the caller Chris said, I think Taylor Trammell hitting the home run. I mean, though Correa did put him up, but Taylor Trammell putting the exclamation point probably was like, oh my, like they're even the guys are to get off the scrap heap from other teams are doing this to us.
Well, I mean, that did turn into the deciding factor because the Yankees scored again. So.
Yeah, it ultimately did. You're right about that. But, yeah, I think they could handle it better if it just wasn't Jose Altuve every single time.
You'd think that they would learn, but you're...
No, they do. Like, I see Yankee... People always screenshot, you know, crying Yankee fans the day after these games, and it's always, Altuve again, Astros are daddy. Like, they realize it. They're going to boo and be mad, but to their credit, they realize it. And I don't think they try to take away from what the Astros' accomplishments as much as Dodgers fans do. I will give that to the Yankees. Like, the Yankees will actually admit, well, they're just our daddies, and Altuve is king of their daddies.
Well,
so.
That's true, because also I woke up this morning, and it was a pretty well-thought-out and, like, typed tweet, and some lady was just kind of like, you know what, look, she's like, it's been 8 years since the cheating scandal. Like, they have continued to win the right way. They've built up their farm system. They've made, like, underrated, low-key, great, like, trades. She's like, as a Yankees fan, a diehard Yankees fan, she's like, we just need to respect it that they – own us, and like it's that simple. And I was like, wow, this is a pretty big step for a Yankees
now,
fan.
I'm gonna quote the late great Macho Man Randy Savage before we go to break here. We'll go to break after this. And I'm sorry, Cam, because I know this is gonna go over your head. That's not a short joke. I just know you don't like wrestling. But the Macho Man Randy Savage, in one of his many great promos, once said, you don't have to like it, but you must accept it. The Astros are your daddy Yankees. Jose Altuve is your daddy's. Suck it. The Bullpen on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. We'll be right back.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew.
You're listening to The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome back into the bullpen here on a glorious but very hot August day here in the city of Houston. I'm Brian McDonald. With me is Cam Smith. You can join us in the conversation like the caller Chris did last segment. HRNP listener line 713-780-3776. That's phone call or text. And I will say this, we are not the most interactive sports talk show in the city of Houston. That belongs to Paul Gallant. He is the reigning defending champion. I respect that. But I will say, if you have a thought on the phone line you want to call in, we will take that phone call. That is my guarantee. Any phone call we get, we will take. I will promise you that. So carrying over the Astros conversation in their win last night over the Yankees 5-3 on Apple TV. I really missed hearing Todd Callis and Jeff Blum on the call, but you know, when the boys get on national TV, I guess that is a good thing as well.
I can't stand.
I would much rather hear when Jose Altuve takes the soul, rips the heart and soul out of the body of every Yankees fan in attendance in that copycat stadium they just built right over the top of the first one. I'd much rather hear that moment as called by Todd Callis than some rando that I'll never hear from again on Apple TV.
Oh, yeah. That's why whenever it goes to Apple TV, if I'm at my, I mean, I'm sure she does this even if I'm not there, but she'll mute the TV sound.
Oh, really?
And she'll have she'll put it on the Astros flagship.
I believe there's an option on there to get the local call instead of the national
Apple?
Call.
Oh.
Yeah, like you can put the local radio call over the game, but.
I don't think she knows about that one.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how old your mom is, but she might not know about that. But anyway, that is an option for anyone who. Is sick of hearing the national guys talk about the Astros, especially since you could hear it coming into that Altuve clip. They started in the first inning. They started talking about the cheating scandal right before Altuve goes yard. It's like
every game that's on an Apple broadcast, they always bring it up.
Especially okay, I'm gonna get sidetracked before we get into Correa and Hunter Brown. Especially when you're playing the I almost cursed there. The GD Yankees, who, hello, Apple Watches. Like, there are so many teams across the league, and we'll never get the full extent as to which teams cheated, which teams didn't, because baseball, for right or wrong, and I get why they did it, wanted to bury this. They didn't want another 1998, you know, steroid-type scandal.
You only need one scapegoat.
Exactly. That's look, I can't say I wouldn't have done the same thing if I was in Rob Manfred's shoes. And I say that even as a Yankee or as an Astros fan. Like, I don't like it, but I get it from Rob Manfred's. Like, he wants to, yeah, basically find a scapegoat, make it a lone perpetrator, like the Tim Donaghy thing in the NBA scandal with the refs betting and fixing games, and then move on. It's much better for the image if you could paint it as one rogue element versus a league-wide problem. But what we've heard about between the Yankees and the Apple Watches, with Alex Cora and the Red Sox, who Alex Cora was here and then went to the Yankees and did the same thing, or went to the Red Sox and did the same thing. There's been teams that use the Thermagun, teams that signal in from the dugout, I believe, from the outfield, behind the outfield wall. I believe the Brewers were accused by several teams of doing that. And let's just take it from the horse's mouth himself, Carlos Beltran, when he came here. And if you believe what the report has been forever, that Carlos Beltran and Alex Cora were the guys that basically came up with this idea and ran it, Carlos Beltran's comments when he came here in 2017 was, you guys are way behind. What does that mean? Like, it doesn't take a genius to figure out what that means. That means it's a league-wide issue. Teams around the league, not just the Astros, because if the Astros were behind, who are they behind? They're behind the other teams who are also stealing signs electronically.
Yeah, and what did they say about baseball? Baseball, there's somebody is always cheating. Somebody just figures out how to do it better.
Yeah. Astros, if I'm going to crush the Astros for one thing in the cheating scandal, it was how they did it, not that they did it. Because I fully believe, not that all 30 teams were necessarily doing this, but I believe it was 20-plus. I believe it was the majority. What I will kill them for, though, is the trash cans. Like, why? Of all things. It was effective, apparently. I mean, look at the season Marwin Gonzalez had. Some other guys on the team benefited as well. Alex Bregman, Carlos Correa benefited from it. Now, Jose Altuve, which makes this whole booing thing even more asinine, Jose Altuve was the only guy who didn't benefit from it, and yet he's the guy still catching the brunt of all the hatred 8 years later.
He's getting, yeah, but that's also due in part because of a Yankees fan. Because it was the same thing with the stupid buzzer. And it's just like, it's just conspiracy theorists now at this point. It's just...
It's annoying, Cam. But it just makes moments last night, though, that much sweeter, right? Like, I mean, it would still be sweet to beat the Yankees because they want to talk about 27 rings when most of the fans were alive for, like, maybe four. Some of the Yankees fans, depending on their age, are alive for one of 27, but they, 27 rings, go Yankees. Shut up. Most of those were won by Mantle and DiMaggio and Ruth and Gehrig. You weren't alive.
It's like Cowboys fans still saying they're America's team, and it's like you haven't won a Super Bowl in
30 years?
You,
not only have they not won a Super Bowl in 30 years, they haven't been to a conference championship game in 30 years. Yeah.
But to Altuve, I think what I enjoy most of it is the fact that he keeps it and stays so humble. Like, He doesn't throw it in the Yankees fans or faces.
He still signs the autographs after the game. Like, he doesn't treat it like it's getting to him at all. He doesn't treat it like any other, that is different than any other game. But he does take it out on the baseball and on the pitchers that face him when those boos happen.
Which probably why it makes people even more mad, because they're trying to get under his skin and it's just not working.
Yeah, the cheating scandal got found out in 2020. So for 5 years, they were hoping, well, I guess 4 years, because the first year was COVID, there are no fans. 4 years, they've been trying to get under his skin and to see his downfall, and yet he's had some of his best seasons since then, and it clearly is clearly having the opposite effect. I mean, they were booing him as loud as, you know, that's the booing of a wrestling heel coming out, the volume and the level of which they were booing him, and then he immediately goes yard on him.
Yeah, and I would be curious to, I mean, obviously he's played a lot more years since 2017 than prior, but I would be curious to know, like, what his splits were batting-wise with the Yankees prior to 2017 and prior, or I guess prior to when they found out they cheated and after, and see if,
yeah,
like...
I don't have those stats, but I can tell you one thing as far as Altuve and Yankees, just furthering the case of the Astros, and specifically Jose Altuve being their daddy. Now, most home runs against any opponent for Jose Altuve in his career, I think you would guess that the first four are going to be the teams that he's playing the most. His other, and obviously he spent, I think he might have spent 1 year in the National League. I can't remember, but maybe he did, maybe he didn't. So obviously the majority of his home runs have come against AL West teams. The Rangers are the team he's hit the most home runs against. Then I think it's Angels, A's, and Seattle Mariners are your top four. But after the AL West teams, which he obviously plays far more than any other team in the league, the most home runs after those teams that he's had against an opponent is the New York Yankees. And he's hit 14 home runs in 73 regular season games, which not quite half a season, so you can't just double it. But do the math, that's a 30 home run pace. I mean, his season high in home runs is 31, and he's basically on that pace for a full season in his career against the Yankees in the regular season.
So 2 years in the NL.
Two years. NL? Okay, still not enough time for him for his home or his stats to be slanted towards that division. It's obviously slanted to the AL West, like I said. So,
yeah. And really it's just 1 year, because that first year, his rookie year, he only played in 57 games.
Right,
so.
Right. So yeah, as you would expect, the most home runs he's had against any opponent, top four, all AL West teams. But that next team after AL West, New York Yankees, again, you can suck it. All right, Carlos Correa, his teammate. We'll talk about the other guys real quick before we get out. Carlos Correa last night, 2 for 3, also had 2 walks, and he had the go-ahead RBI in the 10th inning. Driving in, who was it? Jose Altuve. I think that had to sting. Correa driving in Altuve. Suck it, Yankees.
He's so happy he's back.
Oh, he's
so happy.
He's so happy, but he's also raking. I don't know if you've seen his numbers came. Now, it's obviously a small sample size. The trade deadline was not that long ago. But in 7 games since rejoining the Astros, Carlos Correa is hitting .379 with a thousand OPS. It's actually 1.006, but basically just, you know, 1,000 OPS. And this is, I think, my favorite part of it. So in 93 games with the Twins this year, his WAR was 0.1. In 7 games with the Astros, his WAR is 0.4. Like, he's quadrupled his WAR in 7 games with the Astros compared to 93 games with the Twins. Like, we're not only getting Carlos Correa, but, like, he started the season slow, started to get hot. Like, you're getting the best version of Carlos Correa. Thank you. I mean, I know the Twins didn't make the trade because he declined. They made the trade because they're poor and they're trying to sell the team. So I don't kill them for not seeing a Carlos Correa turnaround happening. But it makes it that much funnier that they got a 0.1 WAR out of him in 93 games, where the Astros have got a 0.4 WAR in just 7 games. And again, .379 batting average, 1,000 OPS in 7 games. I mean, Carlos Correa has been, as advertised, everything we could hope for more, Cam.
Yes, he was not twinning over there in Minnesota.
Oh, my God. I regret going to you. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen.
to the Altuve home runs against teams, you're correct. So against the Angels and the A's, tied for first against most home runs with 24. However, that is 190 games against both those teams. And then you go to the Yankees, where he has 14 home runs in almost a third less games, 73 games.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I mentioned. Like, I'm not going to do the math, so, you know, kill me. But 73 games, 14 home runs, that's, you know, 8 games short of halfway. I'm not going to do the math, but that's a 30 home run pace. It's not just that he's played the Yankees a bunch, and so he therefore has a bunch of home runs. It's because he's hitting home runs at a pace that would equal his best home run season as a major league player, which again is 31, and he's got a 30 home run pace against the Yankees in his career. One more guy to talk about before we go to break, Hunter Brown. I mean, we were all hand-wringing, we were pearl-clutching. Oh, my God, his velocity's down 4 miles an hour. Oh, my God, he gave up 10 runs combined against the Guardians and the Rangers. Well, ever since then, Hunter Brown, he's back. Hunter Brown, 5 1/3 innings last night. Now, in the 6th inning, it did unravel, obviously. He gave up the 2 runs that tied the game, although the Astros should have been up, like I said earlier in the show, by far more, because Christian Walker failed at least three times by my count with multiple runners on. But again, Hunter Brown, 5 1/3, 2 runs allowed, 5 strikeouts last night, was absolutely dominant before the sixth inning. At one point, he had set down 14 straight batters in a row. So he was absolutely on fire until the sixth inning. But since that two-game 10-run outings against Cleveland in Texas that all had us kind of wringing our hands and worrying about his workload and does he have dead arm and all those other things that in hindsight look absolutely silly. In the 4 games since those outings against Texas and Cleveland, he's got a 2.95 ERA with 23 strikeouts and 21 innings. The worrying was for nothing. Like, if you weren't already convinced of that, I'll say it again. 4 games since those two bad games, 2.95 ERA, more than a strikeout per inning. Hunter Brown is fine. He's not going to win the AL Cy Young. Those 2 games might have cost him the AL Cy Young. It's going to go to Terry Skubel of the Tigers. But Hunter Brown is still one of the best 3 to 5 pitchers in the American League, and he's closer to 3 than 5. He's probably 3. I'm leaving myself some leeway in case there's someone I'm forgetting about it. But in my opinion, he's a top 3 pitcher in the American League, and he's absolutely fine. Nothing wrong there. All right, on the other side of the break, we're going to have a little bit more Astros conversation before we get into the Texans and some of the NFL news going around. Obviously, got to talk about C.J. Gardner-Johnson, that weird timeline with the injury, and what it might highlight with depth concerns I have about the Texans roster. Also, got to talk about some of what's happened in the NFL recently. Shedeur Sanders made his debut through a touchdown pass. Trevion Henderson also had a big moment as well, and Anthony Richardson seems like he'll be fine over the long term, but it just highlighted a reason why I'm not scared of the Colts. But on the other side of the break, when we get back, are we overrating as Astros fans how important it is to win the AL West? Jeremy highlighted this yesterday in the Killer Bees, and I think he's absolutely right. I want to expand upon it, why we're focusing on the wrong race when it comes to the Astros in the postseason. Is it the AL West that we should be focusing on, or should we be focusing on another race instead of that? That, when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio, 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith with you here on a Saturday. Go until 2 o'clock. As Cam pointed out, you're on Twitter, your pregame to the pregame. We're bumping into 2. The Astros have a day game as well. So thanks to everyone listening, getting ready to watch either the Texans or the Astros play today. And if you want to join in on the conversation, we'll talk to Lamont here in a second. He's on the phone line. You can give us a call or a text at 713-780-3776. That is the HRMP listener line. We did get a text in, Cam. I preemptively gave the AL Cy Young Award to Tarek Skubal, and a caller points out it's probably Total Arlington, who was out at the remote yesterday, which, by the way, if you haven't been out to BB's Cajun Cantina in Katy, you got to go out there. It's fantastic. I've been a fan of BB's, not an ad, for a while, but they have a different take on their restaurants with a Cajun Cantina, Tex-Mex Cajun fusion, if you will, and it was fantastic. But Total Arlington was out there and actually dominated on who said it. Unlike Jeremy and Joel, not to brag there, beat them 4-1. But from 6171 points out on my take that Tarek Skubal has already locked up the Cy Young. Nathan Eovaldi would like a word before you hand the Cy Young to Skubal, which, fair, Nathan Eovaldi is having an amazing season. His ERA is under 2. He's been sick. I don't think he wins it, but if he did win it, I'd have no problem with it. I wouldn't come on these airwaves and said Tarek Skubal was robbed. If Eovaldi wins it, I have no problem with that.
I would have to put him, Nate, up there, probably over Hunter.
I agree.
I would hate it because it's a Rangers.
I think Hunter Brown right now, and again, apologize if I'm forgetting someone, but I think he's 3rd. If I had to say who wins this, like, what's the Cy Young finish? It's Tarek Skubal 1, Nathan Eovaldi 2, and then Hunter Brown 3rd in American League Cy Young. And if you flip-flop 1 and 2, I have no problem with that. If Eovaldi wins and Skubal 2nd, I have no problem with that. But let's go out to the HRMP listener line right now. And again, if you want to join us as well, 713-780-3776. But Lamont's joining us to talk about the Astros. Lamont, what you got going on?
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you. What's up?
Yeah, yeah. I was just talking about the whole Astros is the Yankees' daddy, or Altuve is the Yankees' daddy. And I love it. I'm an Astros fan, man. But you know, when you think about it in context, I think we need to probably like drill down on that. I think the Astros are the Yankees' daddies when it comes to the playoffs. When it comes to the playoffs and postseason, but in the regular season, if you was to go look at how the Astros match up against the Yankees, it's not all. It kind of reminds me of when Houston Rocket fans talk about Maxwell versus Jordan. Yeah, that sounds good. Hello,
I'm sorry. I'm agreeing with you. Go on.
Yes, we romanticize Maxwell versus Jordan, but when you look at it, Jordan still, he still got his, he still did his thing, man. It's not as good. It's not as good as what a lot of people make it out to be. That said, I do believe that the Astros are the Yankees' daddies, but that's only in a playoff context. In a regular season, I don't see it. It's great to see the Astros beat them in a regular season, but. I just think that we need to kind of back off that. But, you know, being a daddy is the playoffs. So
that's what I'm saying, Lamont. Like, I completely get you, and you might have missed this part of the conversation. Like, I acknowledge, and if they said so on the broadcast last night, I think the Yankees had won, like, 9 out of the last 10 regular season games or something like that before last night, which is fine. But I just enjoy that the Yankees now have to point to regular season games because they can't point to the postseason. The franchise that likes to brag about 27 rings, which for the large part happened when we weren't born, they're now having to talk about regular season success against the Astros because the Astros have knocked them out of the playoffs the last 4 times in a row, the only 4 times they faced.
Hey, when was Yankee Stadium built?
The new one?
The,
about the a decade one, ago, I think.
Okay. I was just recently up there. I was there for the. I lived up there for the old one. But I was just recently up there, and it was in the Bronx over there, right by Harlem.
I believe they built it almost like right next to the old grounds, right?
They built it right there on the East River.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I know it was pretty close. Anything else for you, Lamont?
Yeah. No. I mean, that's it. When I hear people talking about Astros and the Yankees, I was like, Astros seem to get the best of them in the playoffs, but the Yankees didn't got the best of them in the regular season, but the playoffs is what matters the most.
Absolutely.
That's all I have, fellas.
Absolutely. All right, thank you for the call, Lamont. And that was my whole point. Like, I get, and I mentioned this in segment one, and Lamont still may disagree with me, but to make the point, like, the Astros had lost a significant amount of games to the Yankees in the regular season. I think they mentioned it was like 9 in a row or 9 in the last 10, something like that. It was heavily cited towards the Yankees. But, like, I mean, it counts, sure. I just don't care. Like, again, it's just funny to me for Yankees fans to go, yeah, but we beat you in June. Okay, cool. 2015, 2017, 2019. 2022. And I'm not putting this on Lamont, but if Yankees fans want to point to regular season success, then they've already lost the conversation. That's kind of my mindset on it.
So that we're playing, I guess, devil's advocate or fair, or whatever, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. The Astros versus Yankees, Astros are 33-49 in the regular season.
That's an all-time record.
That's okay. That's
not the stat they gave last night. I can't remember how many games it had been in a row, but yeah, okay, sure.
But postseason, you flop it just like you do. It's 13-5 Astros.
Exactly, including a sweep in 2022.
Yeah,
when the Yankees fans were chanting, "We want Houston," after they got through, you know, the divisional round. So yeah,
Most of those wins in the regular season for the Yankees against Astros were when the Astros were having those 100 loss seasons.
That's a good point.
Because it's been almost split, like 14, 15 Astros had a bigger regular season record, 16 Yankees, 17 Astros, 18 Yankees, 19 Astros. Like, it literally switches every single year.
Yeah, again, and let's not dive too far into their regular season record, because I think that makes the point, right? Like, if Yankees fans are having to talk about regular season, again, not to repeat myself, but they've already lost the conversation. Like, and that really gives me joy as an Astros fan to, as the younger of the two franchises that came in the league in the 60s versus the Yankees coming in, I don't know, the late 1800s or whenever it was, for a franchise that has 27 rings to the Astros, too, that we've now reduced them, the you Yankees fans, to having to talk about regular season success because they have no postseason. Like, young Yankees fans in their 20s have one title. Like, if they're, let's say they're 25. Like, AJ, one of our part-time producers, I think he's 23. A Yankees fan who's AJ's age has one title to talk about in his entire life. And so now we've reduced those fans who used to like to pound their chest and brag about 27 rings. Now they're having to talk about regular season success because the Astros, mostly in the postseason, as Lamont pointed out, but last night as well, are still their daddy.
Yeah, and if obviously a championship is there forever, but if you weren't alive for it, then you can
brag about it.
You can talk about it and appreciate it, but you can't use it in an argument.
Yeah, you can use it as a point of reference or as a point of fact.
Yeah.
I'm with you. But if you and a buddy are talking mess and trying to come up with, like, you know, who's been the better franchise, and you're talking about titles that Ruth and Gehrig won in the 20s and 30s, no. I'm not allowing that.
Your parents weren't even alive for that.
My parents were born in 55. I think Gehrig was certainly dead before they were born. I think Ruth was too. Like, I'm not allowing that into the argument. Were you not born? That game was completely different back then with what was and wasn't allowed. You know what I'm talking about. Like, it's a completely different game. I'm not allowing that into the conversation. So, yeah, it's fun to reduce Yankees fans to that. So let's go ahead and we'll combine breaks here. Let's keep the Astros conversation going. We'll get into the NFL in the next hour in the Texans, because there's a few more things I wanted to get into. We kind of ran long there. But I enjoyed the conversation with Lamont. Again, if anyone else wants to call or text in, the HRMP listener line is always open, 713-780-3776. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith with you here on the Bullpen till 2 o'clock. But Jeremy made this point yesterday on the Killer Bees. Cam, I'm interested to see what you think about it, because I agreed with them, and, you know, I'll expand upon it, but we spent so much time, not just this year, not just the last couple weeks, but in past seasons as well, looking at one race, really, when we talk about the Astros on playoff seeding. We talk about the AL West race, either because in past seasons they were up by so much, or in the case of this season or last season, because it was a tight race. Like, right now, they're only a game and a half up on the Mariners. So, I mean, that could change before we get to work on Monday. Like, the Mariners could be in the lead on Monday if everything went perfectly their way. I don't think it will happen. I'm just making the point. But I don't know, or I don't believe, that getting super caught up on that race in particular is worth doing. Because, okay, you know, the team, coaches will always talk about, you know, our first goal is win the division. The next goal is, you know, advancing the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. So I get that you want to hang the banner for the AL West. It's a nice thing to brag about. It's nice to be able to say, like, you're division champs 8 years in a row, wherever the Astros would be if they won it this year. But when it comes down to actually being in the playoffs, I don't know that it matters that much, as long as they're still the fourth seed. Like, if the Astros lose the AL West to the Mariners, but they're still the fourth seed, the Mariners will be hosting a best-of-three series at home. The Astros will be hosting a three-game series at home. Like, the advantage that the Mariners would gain from being the third seed versus what the Astros lost being the fourth seed is nothing. Both teams in that scenario would be at home having to play the wild card series in a best-of-three at home.
Yeah.
There's only one difference, and I'll – sorry, not to cut you off.
No.
But weigh in after this. The only difference would be, because baseball doesn't recede like the NFL, if there was a no doubt top dog powerhouse as the one seed. Because if you get to the three seed, then in the second round, you wouldn't have to face him. You wouldn't face that top dog until the ALCS. I don't view the Blue Jays or the Tigers as that you can't beat them powerhouse that you have to avoid at all costs. This is not like, you know, the 72-win Steph Curry, you know, Warriors, right? Like, okay, let's make sure we do whatever we have to do to avoid them as for as long as we can and hope they trip up before we face them. There's no one in the AL like that to me. So with that being the case, like, I don't care if I face the one seed or the two seed in the divisional round, and there's no difference between three and four. Either way, you're in a best of three at home. Like, I don't see why we're getting so concerned. Like, as long as the Astros don't drop to five or six where they have to go on the road, then I don't think there's any difference here for us to worry about.
No. I mean, as good as Detroit and Toronto are playing right now, there's not much separation between them and Houston. And at the same time, Houston has also been way more affected by injuries than those top two teams. So I think, honestly, the thing that would scare me the most about any of those teams is not even the whole team itself. It's more just A.J. Hinch being with Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, you can't remove him, but you're right. You can't remove him. Like, I just don't – look, I say this fully recognizing that the Tigers came into Minute Maid Park then and, you know, whipped the Astros' ass. Like, I get it. I get it. Like, but I don't fear – the Tigers and the Blue Jays the way I would, like, the Rockets back in the day when the Warriors were the automatic one seed, or the way I would in the NFL when Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson are at the top of the game. I just don't fear these teams like that. So, to me, when you're looking at these races down the stretch as we get closer to September and when these seeds will be decided before October, the race to follow is not the AL West, because, again, there's no difference between three and four. There is a big difference, though, between three and two, or obviously one as well. Like, the race to follow will be where the Astros are in relation to the Blue Jays and the Tigers to get one of the two byes. That is the race to follow. That is a massive advantage. While there's no difference, I mean, literally no difference at all between three and four, there's absolutely a world's worth of difference between three and two, because we saw it last year. The Astros had to play a wild card series. Even though they're at home, they got swept and Tigers moved on. There is a big difference between getting to skip that wild card round. So what we need to follow is the race of the Blue Jays and the Tigers, which right now, if you're looking at it, the Astros are 1.5 games behind Detroit, 2.5 behind Toronto. Toronto lost last night, so the lead gets a little bit shorter. That is the race to follow, not the AL West, Cam. Do you agree with me?
I do agree, and I want to pose this question because I know that we're tired of the first round always being the early day games. So would you be more okay with them dropping from the three seed to the four seed and having to go to Seattle knowing it's going to be
Seattle was the three seed, would face the six seed. So you wouldn't
Seattle. So – If we dropped and we had to go on the road, would you be more okay with that knowing we were playing a night game, or would you rather stay in the three seed knowing we're going to have to do the stupid early day games again?
I don't mind the day games. I mean, I guess that's just me being conditioned to the life of a Houston sports fan, because what is the joke about the Texans? You know, the Texans Invitational, we always know wild card weekend, first game of the schedule, 3:30 on a Saturday, here come the Houston Texans. Because that's where the NFL puts them every single time. Like, with the Astros, this goes back to not even to the beginning of this dynastic run, which started in 2015. It goes back to, like, growing up, not growing up then, I was already an adult, but, like, watching the Astros in 2004 and 2005 when they were going to the NLCS and then the World Series in 2005.
Oh, yeah. I got pulled out of school by my mom to go watch these games.
Those games were in the day, too. Like, I mean, it's just, I guess I've been conditioned to it. I don't know if this is like some weird version of Stockholm syndrome where I've grown to like it because I've grown to like my captor. But I've grown to like the captor of the day game for my Houston sports teams because we know that's just what's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I like kind of the excitement of like the night game. But at the same time, I'm one of those people where it doesn't affect me because at work, we put the game on the projector for the kids to watch.
Oh, nice.
Too. But I get how, like, somebody that works a regular, like, 9-to-5 corporate office.
What grade do you teach?
Basically K through 5th.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so you roam. Okay, yeah. That's nice. Like, I, I'd never had a teacher put on a game for me before. I did have, though, in elementary. This is going to age me a bit, so I regret doing this already. But when I was in junior high, we stopped class and watched the OJ verdict. Our history teacher just stopped class and put it on. I don't know if they would do that today, but it was. I think that was just a moment of time that you kind of remember where you were. And I was in class, and they showed the OJ verdict.
Well, you could turn that into like a math equation. Like, okay, kids, if he starts at point A and he's going 65 miles per hour.
50 to life.
Yeah.
50 plus life means.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No, it's still life either way. But yeah, that would be funny if it was a math class and we got to work sentencing guidelines into the math equations that day. Didn't matter because the glove didn't fit, so you must have quit. OJ, in the eyes of the court, wasn't guilty. Getting to some texts on the HRMP listen line, if you want to get your thoughts in as well, we'll take them. HRMP listen line 713-780-3776. Going back to kind of our talk about, you know, Astros being the Yankees' daddies and the ludicrous nature of fans referencing and beating their chest over titles that were won before they were born. From 5030, and who got exactly the point I was making about titles won during the Ruth and Gehrig's time. But how could people reference a time where people of color couldn't even play? Like, that's kind of the point. It was a completely different game with Ruth and Gehrig. That's not to diminish what Ruth and Gehrig did. They still would have been great players. The Yankees still would have won titles. But, like, to reference something from such long ago that something as dramatic as that, because you could talk about other things, like spitballs not being allowed, you know, the way the fences, you know, the depth of the fences. I mean, hell, some ballparks had, like, the Yankee Stadium, I think, back in the day, actually had Monument Park within play.
Yes, it was in play.
It was
ridiculous.
So to reference things as crazy as that, or the obviously, you know, the ugly side with what they did, not allowing players of color in the game, in referencing titles from that time, just makes the point of how ridiculous it is. It was a completely different game back then. You weren't alive. What are you talking about? Another text coming into the HRMP listener line from 3192. He writes, Brian, I'm living and working in NYC. Every time I talk to a Yankees fan, they call us cheaters, but they have nothing to say when I tell them about all the steroid championships they won. They say everyone was doing steroids. Well, just like everyone was stealing signs. That makes the point because, yeah, like the Yankees fans who would brag about some of their titles, I mean, a title had A-Rod. One of the title teams had A-Rod on it, and he wasn't the only steroid. Jeremy Giambi, Roger Clemens allegedly. Like Andy Pettit, you know, I'm a Deer Park guy. Andy Pettit is king, but the Yankees teams undoubtedly won titles with cheaters. Not only guys who eventually stole signs with the Apple Watches, but with guys who did steroids. So if you want to crush the Astros for stealing signs, yeah, they did. But not only did everyone else do it, but you also benefited with previous title wins that came on the backs of people cheating. So it's just a silly point that people try to make from 5030. I told you I was going to regret bringing up the OJ thing, Cam, about being old enough to where my classroom put it up in school. From 5030, Jesus, Brian, you're old. That's why I regret bringing up that point of reference to my age. 41, but feel like I'm 85. Anyway. Bullpen, be back here in a few minutes. We'll talk about the Texans and the NFL on the other side. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, don't go anywhere.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Who with it now?
You're listening to The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in. Hour number two of the bullpen. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith with you here on a Saturday. One more hour to go. And we'll have Mount Rushmore plus one coming up at 1:30. So stay tuned for that. Right now, talking Texans and some NFL. Plenty going on with the Houston Texans. Not all of it good, obviously, but a lot going on nonetheless. So, Cam, this C.J. Gardner-Johnson thing, like, we all got the news a few days ago. What we thought, I think the first initial guess on the injury was torn Achilles. And then my how things changed over the course of just 24 hours, because it went from torn Achilles to what was put out in one report, which we'll get to the breakdown of that timeline a little bit, ACL, torn ACL out for the season, to not only is it not either of those two things, but they think he might be ready by week one. Like, what was your thought or reaction to how that whole timeline went down with C.J. Gardner-Johnson?
I mean, initially, I thought the worst. I was like, oh, this is... We brought this guy over, and or the Texans brought him over, and first year he's gonna miss. So the vibe just it seemed really bad.
Oh, for sure.
So
it seemed like the vibe was done for the year. Now at least you didn't give up a lot to get him. You really just gave up the corpse of Kenyon Green. So whatever. Yeah, it's basically like you drafted Kenyon Green in the draft a few years ago, and not. Drafted C.J. Gardner-Johnson in the draft a few years ago, not Kenyon Green. So, like, the cost of what you lost really wasn't any really significant. But it did highlight to me, and I don't know if you'll agree with me, a concern I've had even before the injury about the depth the Texans have at a few positions. Like, I think there are a few places where they could lose a guy. And while it would obviously hurt, you know, there would be a downgrade going from, you know, one player, next man up, but there'd still be a downgrade going from one guy to the next. But they have enough talent in a few places to withstand those injuries, specifically defensive line and wide receiver, which is a kudo to Nick Caseri on both, because what were we saying about the wide receiver room in February? Like, we knew Tank Dell was out for the year. We knew Stephon Diggs was gone. Well, we didn't know he was gone to New England yet, but we knew Stephon Diggs was coming off an injury and likely gone. And it was looking like, well, it's Nico Collins and a bunch of people your mom couldn't pick out, you know, in a lineup, right? So it was looking pretty thin there at wide receiver, but with the addition of Christian Kirk in a trade for just a 7th-round pick, which applause to you, Nick Caserio, for that. And then drafting Jaden Higgins and Jalen Knoll in the draft, the two Iowa State wide receivers, he suddenly put this team in a position where they arguably have better depth at wide receiver than they did last year. Now, maybe the top end isn't as good, certainly isn't as good. Like, if Nico, Tank Dell went healthy, and Stephon Diggs went healthy, all hit their ceiling, it'd probably be better than what the Texans have now. But I think you could argue that they have better depth this year, which is exciting to me.
I definitely think that they have more depth, which is crazy for what you first brought up about the fact that a few months ago we were like, oh my God, what receivers do they have on this team? And now I feel like we're almost at the point where it's like, who the hell is going to get cut? Like, because I feel like it does kind of stretch with how many options. Yeah, I'm not saying these options are great, no. But now your problem is figuring out who you're going to cut, not who can you bring in to bolster this
depth.
Which
is a much better problem to have. Yeah, I'd rather worry about, like, who's the 7th guy that doesn't make the roster than, oh my God, we don't have a wide receiver 3. Like, I'd much rather worry about the latter than the former. But so I think you have depth there. You have depth on the defensive line, which is another kudos to Nick Caserio, because obviously he drafted high with Will Anderson Jr. He spent big free agency money on Danielle Hunter. But, like, a lot of the other guys he's brought in with Mario Edwards and Sheldon Rankins and Foley and a few of these other guys, Tim Settle last year, like, a lot of these guys he brought in were not highly sought-out players or guys they kind of – Daryl Taylor was another name he brought in this offseason. He had Derek Barnett last year. Jerry Hughes, I think he inherited. But, like, they've been able to make – a lot of things work really well in the defensive line with now a lot of either draft capital outside of Will Anderson Jr. or free agency capital outside of Danielle Hunter on this defensive line. Like, basically everyone else is guys they picked up either on the cheap or really off the scrap heap.
Yeah, when it comes to that D-line, it's the opposite of what you think with how they do the O-line.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
they kill it when it comes to defensive linemen.
It is. Getting back to the point, like, I feel great about the wide receiver depth. I feel ecstatic about the depth at the defensive line. But what the injury to C.J. Gardner-Johnson didn't reveal, because this is a take I've had, you know, going back to the spring, but kind of highlighted and really put an exclamation point on. Thankfully, it doesn't look like it's that bad, and maybe this is a slightly moot point. But what it highlighted to me is just that, man, the depth at a few positions, and specifically in the defensive backfield, is lacking. Like, we feel great about the starters there. We feel great about Derek Stingley Jr. We feel great about Kamari Lassiter. We feel great about Cam Bullock. And we feel great about C.J. Gardner-Johnson. But then when you get beyond those guys, like, just reading some of the names that you Jalen Petrie, obviously, I mean, I have my doubts about his ability to cover in man coverage, which, you know, kind of important job for a nickel safety. But, you know, he plays the run well as a box safety in the nickel corner. So Jalen Petrie is still, I mean, he's still a plus. I don't love him in coverage, as I said. But, like, you feel great about the starters on the defensive line. Or not the defensive line, sorry. You do feel good about them on the defensive line. But, again, secondary. Derek Stingley, Kamari Lassiter, Jalen Petrie, Cam Bullock, and when healthy, we hope, you know, cross your fingers, C.J. Gardner-Johnson. But you get beyond surface level, you get to the guys that would have to come off the bench if some of those studs I mentioned are hurt, and you got names like D'Angelo Ross, the rookie Jalen Smith, Miles Bryant, Jalen Reed, another rookie, MJ Stewart. You got that crack or that meth head, Damon Arnett. I mean, we literally have someone that could possibly have to play a guy who did meth, Cam. I mean,
was that what it was?
Damon Arnett, yeah, the former first-round pick. He did meth.
I thought he was just selling it.
Okay. You don't think he ever sampled the product?
You know what they say. You don't try
you
your
don't
own supply.
High, yeah, you don't get you don't, high on yeah. your own supply. But you think Damon Arnett, I think he actually did. He got popped for possession, I believe. Maybe it was with intent to distribute, but if it was an amount worthy of distributing, then I think he would have spent jail time.
Hey, I
don't think it was with the intent to distribute.
Who are we to judge somebody's pregame ritual? I mean, have you seen the Peyton Manning Marshawn Lynch one where Peyton was like, what's your pregame ritual? And Marshawn was like, a shot. And he's like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah,
shot of
yeah.
what? Gatorade?
I think Marshawn or someone else also talked about getting high in the locker room, on like smoking weed in the locker room beforehand, which I don't care. I used to, I'm going to. No,
you used
not,
to do that too, Brian?
No, I was about to out somebody because he's on the phone line right now, but I'm not going to do that to him. Maybe I just accidentally outed him. But getting back to the depth, and we'll get to Coach's call here in just a second. Like, looking at that depth in the defensive backfield, the secondary, like, again, you feel great across the board with the starters, but you got a bunch of rookies, cast-offs from other teams, and a literal meth head as your depth for your secondary. Again, Kamari Lassiter, Derek Stingley, Cam Bullock, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, you know, cross your fingers, you know, knock on wood that he stays healthy. Jalen Petrie to a lesser degree. Amazing. You could argue top three, top five defensive secondary in the entire league. But one guy goes down and all of a sudden a meth head is on the field, completely changes everything. So that's just something to – I would also throw running back. I would throw linebacker. Offensive line, it's not so much that they don't have depth. They just suck. So I don't know if you can have poor depth when the overall quality of your starters is terrible, right? Like, you're just overall terrible. It's not that you lack depth. You just have nobody. So
yeah, that's a good point. I was going to say, because they obviously have bodies in there. They just aren't
they
good.
They just suck. Yeah. But it's just something to watch. Like, I think they have really quality starters at linebacker in the secondary. Secondary even more so. Again, I'll say they're top three. But, man, that depth chart. Mighty scary when it includes rookies, cast-offs, and a meth head. But let's go out to Coachy on a mobile, who wants to talk about ESPN getting NFL Red Zone. Coachy, what you got for us?
Yes.
Coachy, you there?
Oh, sorry. Hi. I was getting this weird double feet. Hey, really quick, I just want to give you a heads up. I was kind of hearing you and kind of hearing somebody else talking about Caitlin Clark. I'm getting a dual feed on hold, so I apologize for that.
Oh, weird. Okay, we'll look into that during the break.
That I just wanted to bring it to your attention. But the other thing I wanted to bring to your attention, gentlemen, is, hey, I just want to give everybody a heads up. Enjoy Red Zone while you have it now, because ESPN is going to ruin it, okay? And I know, sorry, I know what I'm calling in on, but the fact that Red Zone has now been taken over, it's just a slow demise for what was just once, as Homelander would say, perfect, all the way down to the last minute detail. Because you know that somehow, some way, Scott Hansen is going to be gone, and they're going to like let Mike Greenberg host it for reasons, because apparently that's your go-to guy at ESPN days, which, horrible, horrible idea. But you know it's something they're kicking around. The thing that we're slowly in this demise of our sports fandom is, D-Mac, you enjoy sports.
I do. I dabble from time to time.
I know you are one to dabble. By the way, I'm sorry. Go JMU. Big Dookie's fan over here.
We heard your voice last week, yeah.
But that was me. What are you talking about? Never be me. But if you like wrestling, Mac, boy, are you in for it for 20. Do you want to watch Raw? You want to watch Raw? Well, guess what? Going to need a Netflix account for that one. It's going to be $7.99 for the ad-free version every month. It's about $95.88 a year. Right away, off the bat, $100. You want to watch SmackDown too? Well, you're going to need a Peacock subscription. That's going to be $10.99 with ads. By the way, then if you want to see those storylines culminate on a PLE. Well, you're going to need ESPN or YouTube TV in order to accomplish that. That's going to be about $9.99.
All right, Koshy, I'm sorry to have to do this. You know I love you, but your phone line's cutting up really bad. I get your overall point, and we'll have to say goodbye on that. And I'll respond here. And again, thank you for calling in. I wish I didn't have to let you go, but that phone line was cutting up really badly there. I get your overall point, and I know Cam will not care about this, but I'll spend a minute or two on it before we go to break and get back to the text.
If you care, I care.
Oh, well, thank you, Cam. I'll give you the little heart here. I get it because there's sticker shock there. Like when you put the price of all these different streaming services out there for what wrestling fans will have to subscribe to get all the content they desire, it seems like a lot. So I sympathize with that. My question though would be, and maybe this is, I don't know how this will be perceived, but like, don't you already have most of that anyway? Like, I mean, for the average person now who, like, there are weirdos out there who just don't watch TV, right? So let's exclude them from the conversation. But the average person who invests in having streaming options and TV and cares about that sort of entertainment, you're already subscribing to some sort of way to get, like, you know, I have YouTube TV. You're subscribing to that or Hulu with live TV or DirecTV or cable or something of that nature. You're already subscribing to Netflix. I mean, The Office and a lot of other shows and movies are on Peacock. You're probably already subscribed to that. Like, I do feel that this conversation about the price tag for wrestling fans that's coming in the next year or so is a bit overblown. Just because I get when you put out the total figure, when you add everything up, it seems like, oh my God, they're trying to drive the casual fan out. They're trying to drive the working man out. It's becoming too expensive to watch. And I would agree with that with your ticket prices if you want to go live events. Those ticket prices have skyrocketed. So I sympathize. But I do feel like for the majority of wrestling fans who were already consuming said content, this is much to do about nothing. Because currently, because he was talking about what's coming in 2026, right? Currently, to watch Raw, you already had to have the Netflix subscription. Currently, to watch SmackDown, it was on USA Network, you already had to have, you know, some sort of cable or satellite or YouTube TV.
I think that'd be Paramount for USA.
Well, I'm talking about, yeah, you're right, for streaming services, but I watch SmackDown on YouTube TV. Like, what my point is, you had to pay for something to watch it. So you already had to pay for Raw on Netflix. You already had to pay for SmackDown on, let's call it, you know, some sort of cable, satellite, whatever. You already had to pay for Peacock for the premium live events, what used to be called pay-per-views. You already had to pay for however you would get CW to watch NXT. Like, I get that when you put out the total dollar amount, there's some sticker shock there, but what, not just Koshy, but what everyone's describing when they talk about this already exists. Like, it really, it's just moving Netflix or is moving, you know, the shows, the pay-per-views from Peacock to ESPN. It's moving SmackDown from USA to wherever. Like, nothing's really changed. It's just rebranded, in my opinion. But anyway, that probably enough time spent on that. On the other side of the break, when we get back on the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. And if you have any thoughts on the Texans, please call us. HRMP Listen Line. You can text us as well, 713-780-3776. But when we get back, I want to talk about some audio from CJ Stroud that had me raising an eyebrow to a people's eyebrow or two to bring back wrestling for a second. That when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in. Three segments to go here in the bullpen on a Saturday afternoon. You're kind of pregame to both the Texans and the Astros today who have afternoon games. We'll see what the Texans put out there. I wouldn't expect a lot from the starters, if any, really, from the starters. That's kind of what preseason has become now with fewer games. It used to be that that third game was kind of the dress rehearsal. Now they never even really have that. Game two is usually the most we'll ever get out of the teams, but even that's probably only going to be like two series. But Texans, Vikings today, Astros I've already started with against the Yankees. That was a 1 o'clock start there on Space City Home Network. But anyway, continuing Texans conversation right now. And if you have any thoughts on what we're about to talk about now with C.J. Stroud or what we talked about with C.J. Gardner-Johnson's injury, both the severity that turned out not to be severe and with the depth concerns that it exposes, you can hit us up on the HRMP listener line. Text our phone, 713-780-3776. Not the most interactive sports show in Houston. That belongs to Paul Gallant. Shout out to Paul Gallant. But we will take every phone call we get. So if you want to join in that conversation, give us a ring. But Cam, we're going to play some audio here from CJ Stroud. I'm wondering if you will pick up on the same things I picked up on. But there was conversation he had with Evan Washburn of CBS that in these next two clips you're about to hear kind of raised my people's eyebrow. Kind of not a red flag, but just a little point of interest. Like, what's going on here? Like, I'm not sure if I should be concerned about this, if this is a problem, but it certainly at least piqued my interest. Let's go ahead and play the first one. Stroud talking about how he could put more on his plate in 2025.
I would say, you know, the ownership of, you know, running the show of, you know, run checks, mic IDs, pass protections. You know, he really bought into it. But one thing that I try to remind myself or tell myself is, like, you know, I have to fight to get to that point where, like, it's comfortable. And it's like, like riding ABCs, you know, but I'm not there yet. So I just got to keep going and, you know, be hard on myself, but also, you know, try to give myself a little bit of grace. But everybody's depending on me and, you know, this offense and how we're going to roll. So, you know, I you know, really hard on myself about it, which I think is a good thing. But also, you know, try to learn as much as I can while in that.
So I don't know if what stood out to me, Cam, will stand out to you. We'll get to the other quote in a minute, so don't worry about it right now. But in that quote, again, to Evan Washburn of CBS, you hear C.J. Stroud talking about adjusting to the new offense from their new OC, Nick Cayley, who came from the Rams, also had time with the Patriots, where he's going to be expected to do a lot more at the line of scrimmage than he did before. Like previously under Bobby Slowick, he never had to call the line protections. Now he's going to be responsible for calling his own line protections, which I think, you know, sight unseen, we'll see how it goes. Maybe my opinion will be changed once we see it actually take the field in September. But my thought was good, because the guys who were doing it on the offensive line weren't good at it. Now, maybe that was the blame of Bobby Slowick's offense, which we saw in the audio of Za'Darius Smith pointing out their easy line calls and slides in that Lions game was junior high-esque at best. So maybe that's on Slowick and not on, you know, Jarrett Patterson and Juice Scruggs from last year. But either way, I'm glad that C.J. Stroud could take his protection more into his own hands, because I trust him more with it than I do those guys. So that's on his plate. He's also going to be given more responsibility as far as changing the play call. If he goes to the line, there's a run called, and they're running it right into, you know, an overload blitz or whatever it happens to be, he has the ability now to change that, which we know from not only the Slowik offense, but its predecessors going back to, you know, Gary Kubiak and that Kubiak-Shanahan offense that's been so prevalent in the NFL for the last 20 years. Kubiak famously never gave guys like Matt Schaub or any of his quarterbacks the ability to change the call at the line of scrimmage. They had to run what Gary Kubiak called. So it'll be interesting to see what Stroud is able to do with more freedom to not only change the calls but also change the protection. But what you heard in that clip was some doubt. I would call it a lack of confidence. Now, it's August 9th, right? He doesn't have to be ready today. But regular season starts in a month. It's not a lot of time before he does have to be ready. And I didn't like Cam in that quote. Not that it's, you know, sky's falling, doom and gloom. Oh, my God, they're going to suck. Not saying that. But I don't like that at this point in the process, he still is seemingly feeling that much uneasiness and lack of confidence with what else he's being asked to do that he's never done before.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. And like, I get it. It's a somewhat of a new offense, a new offensive play caller, but every time that happens, there's some sort of adjustment you're going to have to get used to. It doesn't matter if it's high school, college, or the NFL level. When somebody new is brought in, something has changed and you have to adapt to that. So I get where he's coming from. I guess maybe I just don't want to hear him say it.
Because you don't want it to be true?
Not that I don't want it to be true, but it's just kind of like, I feel like we already know there's going to be
growing pains.
Some growing pains, yeah, with the new offense, but it's just like, it's where we're a month away, and it's just like the city, the fans, they don't want to hear that, like, you're struggling with adapting
that,
to something.
That is a good point, because with what this fan base has had to go through, mostly last year, because even though the protection got off to a bad start his rookie year, it actually became pretty competent latter half of that year. But specifically last year, like, it was not David Carr bad, but it was, you know, 80% of what David Carr went through. It was pretty bad. Like, legit, this is not an exaggeration. We all watched Patrick Mahomes get killed in the Super Bowl. The pressure rate he faced in that game was less than the pressure rate C.J. Stroud faced in the regular season last year. That's how bad the offensive line was. So there's a lot of PTSD, and I'm sure when people hear Stroud being uneasy about this new offense, which includes getting back to the pressure rate he faced, there's some uneasiness there, because we were hoping that, you know, we were kind of sold the bill of goods that moving out Laramie Tunsil, embracing culture, embracing getting our guys in, tough guys who can connect and have chemistry and fight as one instead of prima donnas like Laramie Tunsil. We were sold that bill of goods that was the answer. And from what we've seen from the preseason or the training camp reports, you know, take them for what they're worth, grain of salt. But the offense has been getting their ass kicked by the defense basically every day. And then you hear C.J. Stroud talking about, well, I'm not very confident in what's going on right now. It's got me a little concerned. I'm, again, just raising the people's eyebrow. I'm not fully concerned. I'm not throwing in the towel. I'm not raising red flags. But hearing C.J. Stroud sound that unconfident, and fact, you know, adding to that what we've heard from how the offensive line has fared during training camp, has me wondering how much the offensive line, if at all, has improved.
Yeah, and we touched on this last week, where they're going against their own team that they practice with every day, and they're still struggling. So when the regular season starts and you're going up against a defense that you have not seen at all, the fact that they're struggling now going against their own team makes me feel even more concerned when they actually play a regular season game against a defense that they have not practiced against.
Yeah, that's an interesting. I haven't heard that point be made, Kim. That's interesting, because the conversation in regards to what the Texans offense has had faced in training camp has typically been, well, they're facing a top three defense. So kind of like when a batter takes swings on deck with the weight, like, you know, hey, you take the weight off, everything's going to be easier. You go from facing the Texans defense to facing what on average in most games would be a lesser defense than the Texans. Everything gets better. But there is, I think, a point to that. I don't know how big. I'm still kind of working this through in my head. But there is a point to be made, well, that at least they kind of know what to expect with what they'll face, because, you know, they see it every day. So there is that is something interesting to where it does kind of make you wonder about their adjustments too. Like if they're seeing the same defense, the same sort of schemes, the same sort of stunts and gains and whatever every day, and they're not being able to adjust to it, then are they going to be able to adjust to what they see in the regular season? That is an interesting thing. Like, and I would say overall, I thought the, well, you know, it's a top three defense they're facing in practice. It'll get so much better when the regular season starts. I'll say that's mostly true. Yeah, when you face the Jaguars, you face the Titans, you face the Colts, you face a few other, you know, dregs. I forget some of the softer touches on their schedule. But when you face those bottom teams, no doubt, definitely get better. But are we talking about that? Or are we talking about the Texans taking the next step? Because if they're going to get beyond where they've ever been, if they're going to get beyond the division round to an AFC title game for the first time in their history, what defenses are they going to be facing? They're not going to be facing the bottom teams in the league. They're going to be facing the Chiefs and the Bills and the Ravens, defenses that have kicked your ass many times, Bills to a lesser degree. But with the Chiefs and the Ravens, defenses that have kicked your ass over and over again. So, yeah, it'll be great to face lesser defenses in the regular season, but if the Texans' offense isn't capable of beating a defense as good as the Texans that they face in training camp, then I don't believe they're good enough to beat the Ravens and the Chiefs' defenses in the playoffs.
A 10. I would concur.
You would concur.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go a little long here. Since it's only two of us on Mount Rushmore, we can steal a little bit of time here. Let me play the last clip we have from C.J. Stroud, Cam. So this is C.J. Stroud in that same interview with Evan Washburn of CBS talking about his assessment of the 2024 season.
I thought it was great.
Yeah,
I thought it was great. Not in the point of like winning or losing or success or failures, but it's like what I learned, you know, as a person, you know, as a man of God, as a teammate, you know, as a citizen in society, in Houston, you know, like, so I learned just a bunch. And I think, you know, some of the best things that could ever happen are, you know, things, expectations not being met, because then you really see who cares and who doesn't. Sure. And that's where you, like, you know, you can still extend love, but you don't have to give people access. So it just taught me a lot on just, like, you know, who's really there for me, who's not. And I thought, you know, with what I had and what we dealt with as a team, you know, I thought we did great. You know, we're down on O-linemen a lot. Change a lot in the receiver room, you know, with Tank getting hurt, Steph, you know, and Nico going down early. So, you know, with what we had, I thought we did a good job of weathering the storm. But, you know, at the end of the day, everybody has entitled to their opinion. And I always like kind of like criticism and stuff. I think it always makes me play better.
So I like where Stroud eventually got to talking about, hey, you know, considering what we had to overcome, poor offensive line play, injuries to Nico, who missed 5 games with a hamstring injury. Steph obviously went down with the season-ending ACL, and then Tank missed the rest of the season and this season with a right knee explosion. I get all that. Like, I like where Stroud eventually got to in the conversation. Like, hey, despite a terrible offensive line that was allowing a higher pressure rate than when Patrick Mahomes faced in the Super Bowl, in a wide receiver room that was completely devastated with injuries, we still got to the second round of the playoffs. Like, we still went into Arrowhead and played pretty well, had a chance to win despite all that. It's a very fair point, and I will, you know, co-sign that point. But, man, I saw your reaction, Cam. I think you had the same reaction I did. Where he started when Evan Washburn asked him to assess 2024, when he says it was good, like, I like where he eventually got to. In my mind, I'm thinking, it's like, man, the offensive line was not good. Maybe that's me getting too far into details. But then when he continues on and talks about, well, it was good for me. It was a good season for me as a person, to grow as a citizen. I think the citizen thing is what took it the most. Like, all due respect, CJ, love you. I've got a shirt that was provided by my man Stressens, on Texan Stressens on Twitter. Your face with the words hope underneath. I'm a big fan of yours. You're you were the guy I wanted the Texans to take with the number 2 overall pick when you came out. So I say that in all due respect. I don't care how you've grown as a citizen. It does, like, I mean, all due respect, I do not give a rat's ass about how you've grown as a citizen. Maybe that's me being too harsh, and I don't mean it as seriously as that sounds. But, man, when I hear him being asked about, tell me about 2024, and he's talking about growing as a citizen, Cam? Like,
bro. Yeah, that was hella corny.
It was weird, right?
It was corny.
It was corny.
It was, and it almost seemed like I guess looking back, like, I mean, he says it was a great season. I would say for what they had to overcome, it was a good season. But it almost seemed like he was.
And that's where he eventually got to.
Yeah, but it was almost. It almost seemed like he was almost trying to like deflect from how he really felt about the season by talking about like, oh yeah, I've grown as a citizen and closer to like God, and it's just like, you know, that's not what
point,
we're
bro.
Asking.
That's
yeah,
not the, yeah. Evan Washburn, when he asked that question to CJ, he was not thinking about, well, CJ, how have you grown as a citizen? Have you? Did you fill out the census? Did you vote? Like he doesn't care about how you've grown as a citizen. It was just a weird answer from CJ. I'm nitpicking. I'm having a little fun with it. Certainly taking it further than I actually mean, but a little bit of a weird answer there from CJ. All right, we got to get out. Other side of the break. Mount Rushmore plus one. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5. Throughout the course of human history, singular moments have shaped who we are, who we'll become, and even the world as we know it. Some men discovered new worlds.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
One man advocated for the need to hire a contractor.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Others put pizza on a bagel.
When pizza's on a bagel, you can eat pizza anytime.
These courageous men gazed upon a monument and asked, what if we add one more? This is Mount Rushmore plus one.
Welcome in, Houston, to the best part of your weekend. Welcome into Mount Rushmore plus one, which will get Cam, myself. It feels weird to name all the people involved when there's less people in the studio, Cam. Usually I list four or five people involved in Mount Rushmore plus one. It's just me and you today, brother. But it'll get myself, Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, and I'm going to still throw John Belmer and Sean Mapes into this, into the Texas Radio Hall of Fame, in far less than the 27 years it took those bums, John Lance, to get in.
Just because they aren't here, I don't think there's a viable excuse as to why they couldn't at least text us.
I don't want to read someone else's list, though. Like, if they want to call in, I'm all game for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, see? I know they're just sitting at home on the couch. Yeah.
Well, actually, I don't know what Belmer's doing.
That's a good point.
Mapes is definitely being lazy, though.
College football. Yeah. Taco Bell.
Man, don't tip me with a good time. Like, I mean, I don't know. You're kind of hitting the feels there. Yeah, I'm kind of wishing I had switched places with Mapes now.
Oh, God, might, last 20 minutes solo?
You might talk yourself into hosting the last 20 minutes here, Cam. All right, Mount Rushmore plus one. So my list was inspired. I can't remember who I heard it, but it was someone on a podcast talking about a guy's first name. It's just some of kind of like the newer first names that have become trending and popular in the last, you know, however many years. That, like, can you imagine that name as a grandparent, right? Like, because we're all used to having grandparents with classic sounding names because they came from an era where those classic names were what kids were getting named, right? So it makes sense. You're used to Grandpa John, right? You're used to Grandpa Thomas. You're not used to Grandpa whatever, some of these new age names, Apple, like Gwyneth Paltrow, or Grandma Apple, like Gwyneth Paltrow named her daughter, right? So there's going to be a weird time coming up when you have people with these names that we kind of make fun of now, even though they're young, and eventually they're going to be Grandpa fill in the blank. So that's what my list is inspired by. Names that should not be grandparents. I'll see if you agree with if any of these. First one on the list, Kai. Grandpa Kai. I mean, which has become a popular name, K-A-I. Like, Grandpa Kai? That sounds weird. Like, when I talk to my own grandfathers, I can respect what they told me. Like, if Grandpa Kai is trying to give me advice, like, I don't know, bro. Any disagreements so far, Cam?
That one is hard for me because my best friend since sixth grade, his first born child a couple years ago is named Kai.
Well, let him know, whenever his son becomes a grandparent, we can't take him seriously.
That's fine.
All right. I say that with all due respect, sir. Next on the list, Grayson. Like, Grandpa Grayson? And maybe this is sullied by Grayson Allen, who's one of the more despicable players in the NBA. Freaking Dookie. But, like, I can't take Grandpa Grayson seriously. Like, I just, like, no. That name is just, it feels like you should be working at some sort of communal coffee factory or something. I can't take
Grandpa. I feel like Grayson is a name that it doesn't mature. Like, yeah,
that's kind of the point with all these names. Like,
yeah.
Kai or Grayson, even though it's not what I would name my kid, like, they're fine when you're 20. Like, when you're 80, it feels like we'd almost... Remember that bit from Hard Knocks a few years ago where the Browns DC, or OC, I think it was Todd Haley. Yeah, it was Todd Haley, was talking about one of their players named Carl. And he was the whole joke was like, man, I can't imagine referring to a baby as Carl. It just sounds weird.
It does. True.
So there's, I almost feel like we should have separate names for each stage of our life. Like, there should be a baby name that sounds cute. An adult name, which, you know, is kind of cool sounding in respect in the workplace, and then a older name for when you get older and you have to be thought of as like the wise sage. There should be different, because not those names one name can't reflect all those stages in life.
I think some, especially if you can shorten a name, like, I mean,
like like Tommy when you're like a little kid. Tom when you're an adult, and then Thomas as a grandpa.
It's like almost for me growing up, like up until like even after college, it was always like Cam or Cammy. But now that I'm in my 30s, mm-hmm. it's the full like Cameron. Cameron. So now I feel like that
Cameron is fine as a grandpa. Yeah. So yeah, you gotta have like a 3 stages name. All right, so I've listed Kai and Grayson so far. We'll go to a grandma name here. Grandma Laney. I can't get behind that phrasing. Pause. I can't respect Grandma Laney. I know it's been made famous by that singer Lainey Wilson. I'm not a country guy. I don't really know her work. But Grandpa Laney sounds. Or Grandma Laney sounds worse. I'll power through. We're running behind. Last two names on my list. So one of this is one of these names is definitely popular and maybe more classic sounding. But I think it still sounds weird. Grandpa Aiden. Nah, doesn't work for me. And last one on the list, this is the name that was inspired by the podcast I was listening to, but Grandpa Justin. I don't know. Like, I just, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm on the island here. But Grandpa Justin, I don't trust the sage advice Grandpa Justin gives me. It just kind of sounds like a douche name. And so it doesn't age well to a guy in his 70s or 80s.
As common as a name that is, I honestly don't.
You know a single grandpa or a single grandfather aged person named Justin?
No, and in fact, exactly. I think I've had one Justin in my phone book, and it was from like a decade ago. Like,
yeah,
I just,
yeah, like, I feel, Justin feels like a name where you have to die before you can become a grandma. Sorry, that sounds harsh, but you cannot be allowed to be a grandpa with the name of Justin.
Yeah, you can.
I'm taking this way too far. I kid. Cam, what is your Mount Rushmore plus one?
So my Mount Rushmore plus one is in honor of my middle sister. She came into town yesterday and gender revealed her first child, which is...
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's out of all of us siblings, it's the first one. So finally get to be an official uncle. So I went with worst or most stupid gender reveal ideas because
there's a lot of those out there.
A lot of them.
Yeah, there's a lot.
And some of these are actually based on it actually happening before.
Oh, things you've been to?
Not that I've been to, but I've just witnessed, holy crap, they actually did this. So the first one, I have nothing against going to the gym or weightlifting because I enjoy going to the gym, but I can't stand the ones where they're outside with the heavy weights and they're trying to like deadlift a heavy amount of weight and then drop it on the balloons.
Oh,
but it's just
I've never seen that one.
I feel like
that's ripe for disaster.
It is, and especially when it's been done by a few pregnant women, and it's just like, should you really be straining your body and risking dropping this on your head just so that you could...
Wait, so they're not just like lifting it up to chest level.
Oh, they're like clean sweeping it. Yeah. Wow. And then throwing it down on like a balloon or something. And I'm just like, you're risking so much.
Especially since like how much weight would it take to pop the balloon? And like what height would it take? It wouldn't take much weight or for much of a height to pop the balloon. Like just bring it up to your waist, 10 pounds, that'll... Pop the balloon. Anyway.
Like, I feel like that baby, you're risking that baby just like popping out.
I feel like you're risking it dropping it on your foot.
You're risking a lot. Yeah. and the next one, and this has been done too, it's mostly in the country areas, but starting starting a fire with like the color smoke. Like it's supposed to be like a bonfire, but there's been times where it's gotten out of control.
Oh, so they put something in the bonfire that'll make the smoke turn either pink or blue?
But there's been times where the fire has gone out of its like protective rim and it started an actual
fire. That. Like any gender reveal party that comes with the risk of a natural disaster, probably a bad idea. I'll just start there.
And I get it's an exciting moment, but it's just like y'all are doing so much for clicks and views, and it's just you're just telling random people if your baby's a boy or girl.
Yeah,
like
there's so much more that we could get into that, but we do so much more for clicks and views that we should ever, like for my gender reveal, and it was just for my parents and my wife's parents. My sister lives out of town, otherwise she would have been there. But we just got cupcakes with what ended up being a pink filling inside. Kept it simple.
Yeah,
hey, here's dessert. It's a cupcake. Take a bite, you're going to find out what sex your grandkid is.
Yeah. My sister's husband, he found out before her, so he picked blue flower petals and pink flower petals. And then when he found out it was a girl, he put it in a box. And so yesterday they revealed it by, because I'm the oldest sibling, letting me open it just to show simple little pink petals. So,
all right, what's the rest of your list?
This one, of course, you can probably guess, happened in Florida. Sure. Somebody tied down an alligator and put a balloon with, I guess, like water coloring in there, and
got it to bite down on the balloon.
Got it to bite down on the
now
on the balloon.
Animal abuse into our gender reveal.
It's Florida.
Okay, next one. I don't even want to talk about that one's terrible.
The next one is when people use their cars and they'll find a way to, I guess, in the exhaust pipe. I don't know how they do it. I'm not.
Oh, they get the pink or blue smoke coming out?
To come out of the tailpipe, but they're not just driving casually. Like, they're burning out. Like, burning out in, like, a parking lot.
So dumb.
Yeah.
And it's someone that watched Fast and the Furious.
It's just like, the moment you lose control, that car is just, you know. So, that one right there.
I don't like that at all.
And then the last one is using, like, explosives.
Yeah, no, that I've seen quite a bit.
Like, I saw one that was cool because the guy, he shot it from like a super reasonable like distance to blow the explosives up, but he also knew what he was doing. But there are people that will put dynamite or something inside of like a broken down dryer and shoot it from 30 feet away, and you see that thing flies like 5 inches from them, and it's all just to reveal the baby.
Yeah, it makes for a good YouTube video, but again.
Yeah, I mean, we're laughing.
Whenever the gender reveal comes with the risk of a natural disaster or the loss of life, maybe we should make a different plan.
Yeah.
All right, that'll do it for Mount Rushmore Plus One. We got to get out. We're way over. On the other side of the break, our final segment today, what we love from sports this week and our worst people in sports. That when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in. Final segment today on The Bullpen. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, you here for just a few more minutes. Programming note, we will be back next week. I believe John Belmo will return, and then Sean Mapes will be back at the end of the month. I think every week with us starting after that. But a few minutes left here today, and we will wrap up, as we always do, with our worst person in sports this week and what we love from sports this week. Cam, my worst person, and we'll have some audio from this member of worst person, who I think needs to have his jersey retired in the worst person in sports Hall of Fame alongside Paul Pierce and a few others. But Jerry Jones just continues to run his mouth about this Micah Parsons contract and holdout. And I don't know if it's possible for a man to sound more out of touch than Jerry Jones does in this next clip. Go ahead, Cam.
It's my understanding nothing was put in writing. So how would you describe a deal getting, so to speak, done and then walked away from?
I bought the Dallas Cowboys with a handshake. Took about 30 seconds, and I gave the number, shook hands. The details we worked out later. As a matter of fact, one of the details involved a lot of money, and we had to flip a coin over that. But the fundamental I'm buying, and you're going to sell it to me for that range. That's done, and those are done with eye contact and handshake. So you understand why I, the way that I communicate with people that I negotiate with. But let's leave it at that. There is no question that in the case of a player contract, you have to have it in writing. All parties do. We have a contract in writing, yet we're still talking about renegotiating it. So much for that.
I mean, I don't know how out of touch Grandpa Jerry could have sounded, but he just exceeded my expectations. He's talking about, he's asked about what he had said in the Micah Parsons negotiations where he talks about a deal being agreed to and then it didn't happen. She's like, well, if he had a deal, wasn't it in writing? Why didn't the deal happen? And he starts talking about buying the Cowboys with a handshake and eye contact and flipping a coin, allegedly over millions of dollars being in the deal. Like, he talks about a significant financial piece in the deal that took place for him to buy the Cowboys that was, according to Jerry, decided on a coin toss. Like, if Cowboys fans are wondering why they haven't won anything in 30 years, there's your answer. Grandpa Jones is still talking about basing contracts on coin flips and trying and deals being just, you know, spit in your hand and handshake, completely clueless to the way things work now.
It's like he's still living in the 90s. He was frozen. It's like he was frozen and he's just now waking up.
Sadly, that's not the case. All right, Cam, who's your worst person in sports?
My worst person in sports is the school or the school district that suspended Teddy Bridgewater for using his own money to Uber kids home at night in a dangerous part of Miami.
Yeah, not a great look.
I mean, what?
Yeah, but enough with the anger sharks, Cam. Time to stop swimming with the anger sharks. Instead, we're going to go ahead and doggy paddle over to the Sea of Tranquility as we take a deep breath, relax, and talk about what we love from sports this week. And Cam, what I love from sports this week, and we have audio to play, Tom Brady. Now, it's kind of weird that his statue unveiling happened at a preseason game. It's kind of weird for the greatest quarterback of all time to have a statue revealed at a preseason game, but I get it. He's also a Fox, obviously, broadcaster, so his regular season, a little bit busy. But Tom Brady talked at the statue unveiling, and in this clip you're about to hear, took some shots at the Jets.
But in the end, this statue isn't just for Pats fans. It'll also give all the Jets fans something to throw their beers at as they leave the stadium every year. Probably in the second quarter. Maybe the third.
He was generous there at the end saying the third quarter. Although, Patriots not great right now. Although, I do like the Patriots this year more than the Jets. I have more faith in them turning things around with Mike Vrabel. And Drake May has not looked bad. We'll see what the Jets do. But, I mean, Aaron Glenn, like him, former Texan. But he's got a tough turnaround there in New York City. All right. Cam, what'd you love from sports this week as we wrap up?
1,000% Jose Altuve keeping the name of Yankees daddy.
Yeah, that was great. Ending the show the way we started it, talking about Jose Altuve being the Yankees daddy. All right, that'll do it for the bullpen this week. Yankees suck. Go Astros. Hopefully they're already up. I haven't been paying attention because I'm trying to do the show, but I know they started at 1 o'clock. We'll see what happens with the Texans today, although I don't think many important players will be playing, so probably mostly irrelevant unless there's an injury. For Cam Smith, I'm Brian McDonald. We will be back next week. Have a great weekend, Houston.
Listening to ESPN 97.5.